Welcome to our second day of the industry seminars here at Homebrew Con. Our first seminar today is Supply Chain Strategies for Managing Inventory. Interestingly, in our 2016 Homebrew Supply Shop survey, we actually asked a new question to retailers saying, what's one area of business operations that you struggle with most? And the most frequently answered section of that question was supply chain management. So how perfect that one of the seminars that we have today is talking just about that. Our speakers today are Chris Geyer and Josh Stapleton of Bernoulli Brewworks. Chris got his start in the homebrew industry 2 years ago and has worked in corporate operations and outdoor retail management for the past 10 years. Josh started in the homebrew industry 2 years ago when he opened a local homebrew supply store. Having worked in the corporate world for more than 15 years as a manager of operational supply chains, he's honed his skills and learned how to apply them in the homebrew environment. So will everybody please join me in welcoming Chris and Josh.
Good morning, every guys. I want to start off with some inspiration. Are you too busy for improvement? Frequently, I am rebuffed by people who say they are too busy and have no time for such activities. I make it a point to respond by telling people, look, you'll stop being busy either when you die or when your company goes bankrupt. That's actually a quote from the gentleman who started the Toyota production system. So a little bit of our background that Josh will get into is very much lean application and taking things that the auto industry has done for years. And now we've refined it in our day jobs, and we've also taken that and applied it to our homebrew store. So again, this is why we're here today. We're excited to see everybody. Immediately, so I know it's early. We had a lot of fun last night, so I want to make sure and get you guys engaged and understand what we're going to do for you. So what's in it for you? We're hoping that what we provide will be able to give you tools to increase margin, grow your business, tools to give you a competitive advantage, whether locally or on a larger scale, reduce stress. So instead of your inventory having to be just by your gut or tribal knowledge, you now actually have a systematic approach to managing your inventory at the shop. Also, to prepare to deliver the best experience for your customers, knowing how competitive it is right now based on the market meeting we had yesterday, we want to do everything in our power to give more value, make our customers more satisfied. So again, we're going to take you guys from being Clark Kents to Supermans. We're going to make sure that you guys walk out of here with some very, very real tools that you can immediately implement.
So, right after the event, wanted to get you guys some equations to get going. So if you guys want to write these down, or I can call someone to explain. No, I'm just kidding. Hit the button, please. Just kidding, obviously. So I got to thank Steve for putting us on at the 9 o'clock when right after us is big party, big fun. You know, so supply chain, you guys can get a quick nap, and then you know we'll get to the fun events. So just an overview quick on this. I mean, we're not going to get into, you know, I talked to a guy last night that was running a supply chain for Ford Motor Company. Okay, if you're doing that, we're not going to help you very much here. But so this is kind of more on your novice side, maybe a little bit into the intermediate. But it should give you some simple tools. We're kind of go through our system of what we use. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do this. So you can kind of take them and apply them how you see fit. So just some background on us. I mean, we're young in the beer industry. We only started a couple years ago, and it's actually kind of a funny story with, yeah, we literally started brewing 3 years ago. So within 6 months, we opened up a homebrew store. And I remember we bought all the stuff that we used and just piled up this inventory. I think Mike's sitting back there. He knows what all we bought. We bought all the wrong stuff. So as soon as our customers walk in, they're like, hey, do you have this? I don't know what that is. Can you use this? No, I'm not going to use that. So, you know, it took us a while from when we had this massive pile of inventory that was, for all intensive purpose, worthless because it's not what our customers wanted, to kind of bleed that down and begin to get into a cadence. So, you know, there's three of us that are engineers. One of us is in operations, and then there's one person in human resources. It's kind of the professional world that keeps us online. But we're local to Memphis, and you know we say we haven't brewed for very long. I know a lot of you guys have been doing this for many, many, many years. But you know, within our 3 years, we've really pummeled through a lot of beer in our time. So we hope we're on some level of par with you guys. So we put our med device guy up there because we're more med device, you know. But audience-wise, you know, this can go to local homebrew shops, online shops, your hybrid models, your brewery, your distributors, basically anyone managing inventory. That, you know, that hopefully this will be helpful to you. Just some lingo. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but we gave you some handouts. Some of it is pretty basic. Some of it's a little more advanced. Things such as like ABC codes. We're going to talk about most of these things. We just wanted to highlight them. You know, the point of sale, you can read in parentheses. Standard order quantities, standard deviations of demand. These are all things that are kind of key inputs to helping to manage your supply chain. So if you have questions afterwards, you know, keep your sheet and take a look at it. It'll kind of explain anything if you have questions on.
Real quick, obviously, we've got the two columns. You have one that's more or less the definition, the by the book, but then in, you know, early this morning, what you can take home with is kind of, you know, what it means to you in terms of just normal day-to-day language. All right, so what we want to talk about now is the realization that inventory does equal cash. That's why we're hopefully all here, is we all have that same realization. We understand that. We want to give you guys the tools so not all of your money is tied up in inventory that isn't turning. So when we talk about turn rate, you have the example here. If you carry $50,000 of inventory, turning an average of 2 times per year. So if you're talking about the more or less the equation is your overall revenue by a snapshot of your inventory. So whether or not if you're selling 100 grand, but you have 50 grand of inventory on the shelf, on average, you're only turning it about twice. What we want to do is have you guys where you're investing in the right inventory so then you can have more or less smaller amount of dollars in your inventory, but you're able to turn that more frequently, so then that gives you additional cash that you can do whatever you want with. So does that kind of make sense? Kind of get some heads nodding? So like in the example here, you would give an additional 30 grand to pocket and do whatever you want with. So whether that's to grow your business, you know, expand your footprint, add brew on premise like we talked about yesterday, as anything. I mean, the sky's the limit. Obviously, target whatever you want to do to add more value to your customers. If you don't need the cash, that's awesome. That's not us. We always think that we could do more, get a better product out to our customers, and reinvest in our business. But the other things that this helps you do, by making sure you have the right inventory, you're going to naturally improve customer satisfaction. You know, some of our product, you might have customers that are always checking grains or wondering, you know, how often has that grain been sitting out? Do you have, you know, already pre-crushed milled grain or is it whole? As well as if you can kind of, same thing when we first started, for whatever reason, we thought that it would be a good idea to carry 3 sacks of Special B. We still have 2 sacks of Special B in our shop. So it's once you understand, we'll get into some of the tools to analyze your sales and understand to, you know, how much do you actually carry, whether or not you set, you know, smaller bins for your special grains, or maybe you have 55-gallon drums for your high turners, your base malts. So the example below, not to offend anyone, but if you have stuff where every grain across your shop is in the same size bin, well, your customers might just naturally kind of wonder, well, I haven't seen that Carafa 3, like, move ever. So they might just be hesitant. It might say something to them, as well as, you know, your liquid yeast and so on and so forth.
So, you know, one strategy that we're not going to talk about, but it can just be, I can just buy inventory every time I need inventory. Okay, if you aren't concerned with margin, sure, you just order every day, have shipments coming in, but that's going to cost you a lot of time and money. So, you know, when you get into kind of this model, it's really supplier engagement is critical, but I really don't want to talk about this model because this doesn't work. It's going to run you out of money real quick. But, you know, what's your order cadence is kind of the thing. Like, Do you guys order on a monthly cadence? Do you order on a weekly? Do you order every 8 weeks? You know, those are kind of important things. And as you begin to look across the different various suppliers you got throughout your supply chain, you may have different order times with them that'll roll up into the lead time. So go on to the next one. So when we hop up on, there's kind of a balance here. And look, I know we're getting into like charts and we'll start looking at math. But it just for a visual, you know, when you think of a back order, it's a missed sale. So your customer come in, 9 times out of 10, they're going to either go somewhere else to get it. Occasionally you can get a swap. That's one pretty easy thing in this industry. Someone wants a yeast, maybe they'll go for a dry version or something like that. But, you know, when you go into cash flow, you're talking about the money that's available to you, as Chris was saying. You know, if your dollars are sitting in inventory in your shops and your warehouses, wherever it may be, that's money you don't have available to do something else with your business, to try and grow it. And, you know, that inventory just reduces that cash flow. But on the same side, you see kind of on the chart, you get an upper and lower limit that you guys have to decide. You know, there's not someone that can tell you how you want to do your business, but if you're trying to increase your turns too high, you're going to be really hitting into those freights. So you're going to be having a lot of shipment costs coming in, but if you keep your inventory too low, you're going to have all your cash sitting out there in inventory. So it's a balance of what your business is, how you want it to run. You got to make that decision for yourself.
One tool that we've created for ourselves is it's good to always have secondary sourcing. You know, we have our different distributors here in the room, and, you know, they'll be out on the shop floor. Now, some have proprietary products that you can't dual source, but others, like 2-Row, hopefully you can get 2-Row, whether it's, you know, RAR or Breeze or something like that. You might have a customer preference, but a lot of the guys on the base malts, depending on maybe the origin, but you can substitute those a little bit easier. So that's where you can kind of have an order cadence where maybe you're hitting up one supplier every 4 or 5 weeks, and then on the inverse of that, you're hitting up another supplier. So if all of a sudden you have a big swing in your inventory, you have a backup plan. So, you know, on some of the other things that might be more proprietary or only you can only single source, those are the ones that you have to be a little bit more careful about to understand, you know, the ordering cadence for that inventory. The other thing to apply to this, you know, this is about how much money you have in your inventory. That also targets your sales price. So if you guys are working with dual sourcing where you might get one from one company, another from the other, you want to make sure that your retail price is set. So if all of a sudden you follow up and order with your other guy, you don't bust and lose your margin or start giving away product. Or if, you know, one or the other might change the pricing, you want to make sure and keep that very live and keep that updated.
So this is a kind of a breakdown of what we're going to go through here. So just kind of from top to bottom, you know, first step is your data collection, your analytics. You know, you've got to have your sales data. Second step is determine what your service level is going to be by item classification. We'll explain all these as we go. But determine your lead times by your supplier. And lead time here is a little different because it's going to be kind of order frequency. So it's not your traditional ship to receipt lead time, but we'll explain. Developing your standard order quantities, setting your safety stock, establishing your reorder point, and then managing your system. And we'll talk about a few different methods to do that.
So obviously, to Josh's example at the very beginning, we busted right out of the gate. You know, right out of the gate, we tried to forecast, and you know, you're trying to set your supply based on what your customer demand, what you think it is, but without data, without some sort of, you know, very intense market research, that's hard. Like, you might have your gut about what your customers want, but based on your market, your specific market, or maybe even the season, it might change. So this is, now that we're all hopefully here and have some time behind us, you really have to first really, you know, whether it's using your point of sale or with manual lookups, you have to be able to have access to your historical sales data so you can start to really drive these improvements.
So that, as Chris was hitting, I mean, it's vitally important that you get that information. You know, it's whether you're using a ShopKeep or, you know, Square, point of sale, Excel, a beer napkin, whatever you use, you have to be able to capture that sales information. That way you got that history, you can apply that to your analysis that builds up into this model, and you can use it to serve your customers. You know, time span is another important. There's some seasonality within this business, obviously. As you get into that, you'll begin to see, and you can get a little bit more advanced with it. For the purposes of what we're talking about today, we're going to take it back down a little bit more level into a little more basic than that, but we'll talk on kind of seasonality, some tools. So service level, you saw ABC code. ABC is basically a way of designating based on what you sell from an individual item level. Kind of the easiest way to think of it for us is say like 2-row is going to be an A item. You guys probably run through pallets of 2-row all the time. When you look at, you know, the stainless steel with diamond engraved growler, okay, maybe that's a C item because there's only a couple guys that may buy those things. It's not saying that any one SKU is more important than another, but what it is I want to say for my A items, 99% of the time, I want to have that product in stock if my customer's asking. For those C items, of course, we want to say everything's 99%, but again, if you do, you're going to have piles of inventory, and you're not going to have any cash available. So it's a method that you go through. Kind of the easiest way to break this down is take a look at your entire sales data. About, you know, 80% of all the SKUs that you have are going to be C items. You know, maybe 15% are going to be B, and 5% are going to be A. So you're going to drive a lot of revenue off that 5%. You're going to drive not so much off that 80%. So that's kind of the difference in the balance of it.
Your gut, I'm sure you guys already have the natural inclination. Think about it the same way. What would you be super embarrassed if a customer came in and you didn't have it? 12-ounce bottles, you know, sanitizer. I mean, the fundamental building blocks of your homebrew experience is going to be, you know, those A items.
So second piece is lead times. Now, for this one, again, it's a little different than just your traditional time from order until you get it in. There's a component here because you have to build this out on what your order frequency is. So the example we've got up there, you know, if you order every 3 weeks, and on average it takes about a week for them to get a pallet load into your shop, then your lead time is that 3+1. So it's 4 weeks is what you're going to build into this model. So every 4 weeks you're going to have inventory hitting from whichever suppliers you use onto your shop. When you get that lead time, you've got your service level ABC code chosen, you're going to run into like what we call a standard order quantity. So setting this is really, it's a pretty simple equation. Again, it's your lead time times your average demand over that lead time. So I put up an example. Just for example, you sell an average of 25 airlocks per week. You order every 2 weeks, and it takes a week for the shipments to get there. So your lead time is that 2+1. You're running in 3 weeks. Your average demand over that is 25 units per week. So your standard order quantity is 75 units. That's an important number. It'll come up later as we begin to tie all these things together.
All right, so safety stock. Safety stock is that buffer of inventory that is going to be calculated with some of those other tools, and we'll get into those specifics. But what is it? Well, it has nothing to do with safety equipment. Safety stock is literally a buffer of inventory that honestly, in a perfect scenario, you don't plan to ever utilize that safety stock. That more or less is your buffer based on some of the tools that we'll go into, just like it says on the deck, that it's there to protect yourself from the demand variation. So whether or not, you know, there's some sort of storm that occurs and that affects your supply chain in, you've got some reserves to protect you. Same thing, you know, on the, you know, variation in supply as well as variation in demand. You know, all of a sudden, there might be a homebrew event where everyone is chasing Saison yeast. You didn't know that was coming. So, you know, to make sure that you have something there so you can cover for those. Now, that doesn't work on maybe C items, but that's where you start to be able to classify your different items. All right, so safety stock. Now we'll get into it. So, unfortunately, it's not going to just jump off the page on how to do this. We, like Josh and I said, this is stuff that we've both, you know, been trained in, as well as research on a daily basis to try and keep up with it, keep our knowledge up to speed with all the latest and greatest stuff. But this is what it is. It's your lead time times your Z-score times your standard deviation of demand. So the deviation of demand, if your demand is not like a perfect cadence weekly or monthly, you know, sometimes it jumps up, sometimes it drops, that's going to increase your deviation. So that way you have to carry more inventory because it's hard to predict. If everything was like dead on every time, that number would be lower. Your Z-score now is what's tied exactly to what Josh was saying in terms of your ABC codes. There's a group called APIX that a lot of times gives you general rules for this, but this, again, you can control for your business where you want to set your service level. Like in this example, it's all really, really high, 99, 98, 95. In ours, again, it's about 99, 80, 75, so on and so forth. That's things that you have to come up with. But more or less, based on your product identification, you're going to go across, and that's going to be your Z-score, and that's the number you build into your formula to figure out how much inventory to carry.
So reorder point is kind of the next key point of the equation. So, you know, if we're ordering everything on every single shipment, you really shouldn't do that. What you want to try and do is set a reorder point that's a trigger number that tells you, hey, I've got to order because I only have enough stock to cover me over that lead time, which is my order time plus ship time and receipt. So when you roll that up, you're going to have, I don't know if you want to draw this on the board.
I don't have a marker.
Okay. So the reorder point is your order quantity plus that safety stock we were talking about. So we talked about order quantity before. That was, you know, the 75 units of the airlocks. Then you got your safety stock, which is your buffer. Thank you. Your safety stock, which is your buffer, in order to protect you in case you have some people coming in and they're buying additional items. You know, you may bleed into that safety stock, but then your order comes back in. So just putting an example on here, you know, if you have an order quantity that you've already established as 100 cases of bottles, so you're going to order 100 cases, your safety stock is 12 cases a bottle to protect you from that demand variation. So your actual reorder point in this is your order quantity plus your safety stock, so it comes out to 112. So Chris is he's drawing up a chart. It's going to show you kind of the relationship. And while he does that, I'll move into the kind of the example of the system at work. So we've talked about reorder point, we've talked about order quantity, we've talked about safety stock. If you look on the left, we're going to replenish our airlocks. So the left side is kind of your data set. So I'm ordering every 3 weeks. I got a lead time of 1 week. Current stock is 60. My demand per week is 25. And I've got a standard deviation of demand at 1.2. Item classification for this is an A. So, you know, as you kind of roll over to the side, what is your numbers that you're going to use? So your safety stock, being an A item, if you rolled back up to the table we showed you, we wanted a 99% service level. That rolls to a 2.33, so that's your multiplier for your Z-score. So we've got a four-week lead time, a Z-score of 2.33, and 1.2 for our standard deviation of demand. And if you guys put all your information for, like, your sales by SKU across, say, in Excel, you can pretty easily calculate standard deviation of demand. It's pretty simple to do. The reorder quantity is going to be every 4 weeks. You got those 25 units, so you got 100 units. And then your reorder point is 100 plus 11. So this specific order is going to be 100 plus your 51 units under par. So you're actually going to order 151 right there. So he's probably drawing up a chart right now. I can't see, but it's going to show some safety stock and some motions between these. But it's not that you can say every 3 weeks I'm going to order 100 units because you may be below your stock levels. You may run into a situation when you come up on your order quantity that you don't need to order. That's fine. Wait until your next order. You could be even further down. Maybe you're getting down at your safety stock levels by then. But you begin to kind of see a chart that runs down and up and down and up with that safety stock as having a barrier between you actually stocking out a product.
So if you guys can see this, I know I wasn't totally prepared. Thank you for the marker. This is more or less just a simple graph with inventory over time. The idea with the safety stock, like Josh, that's stuff that you really don't want to tap into. That's to protect you. So as you go down, if you're current, say, this is kind of the perfect scenario with if you're at 60 and that is also the time where you're going to order, then this is that example. But you could be at 60, but in terms of your ordering cadence, you might still, like, that 60 might continue to drop until you're ready to order. So that's why you have that higher inventory level depending on the time, the frequency of your order with that supplier. Obviously, hopefully, the example with airlocks, you should be able to get with anyone, so it shouldn't be that big a deal. But in terms of this, if you're going down, this just says, okay, 11 is the protection area, your safety stock. That's inventory, again, that you don't want to tap into. That's not really active inventory. You're starting at 60, again, with the example here is that you're now taking 25 out across that time where you're ordering. So if you're ordering here, you're going to add that additional 151. Well, you're dropping again another 25 down to 35. That's when your delivery hits, and now you're up to 186. Well, now again, you're continuing just based on, you know, a perfect scenario where 25, 25, 25 are dropping on a weekly basis, but then you'll hit again, you know, once you get to that target reorder point at at 111, that's when you'll, no or less, that's when you again have to look, okay, across my ordering schedule, you're not going to order every time that supplier shows up, but if in your system it tells you you're either at or below that reorder point, then you add it to your order.
So kind of a summary of those tools there, you know, again, I'm going to repeat them just for emphasis, but safety stock is your Z-score, your lead time, your standard deviation of demand. You know, your order quantity is going to be your lead time times your average demand over that lead time. Your reorder point is your safety stock plus your order quantity, and then your reorder quantity is that order quantity plus your makeup. So kind of those four pretty simple equations can kind of get you into a system, and from this point, you can evolve it. There's a lot of strategies that run with this. You know, so kind of three common methods for doing this is a systematic way. So we've kind of given you a basic systematic system to be able to use. You know, it says in inventory software, it doesn't mean you need a massive ERP system. It can be an Excel tracker. It can be, you know, a set point in Square or whatever system you may use. You can use also what's called Kanban. So Kanban has several advantages. It's got several disadvantages too. We're going to talk about it in just a second as an option for you. But it's basically a visual bin control. So, you know, a lot of you may have smaller shops. If you've got a big distribution warehouse, Kanban's definitely an option you can use. For some of the smaller shops, it's a little tough just from some of the space constraints you're going to run into. And then the third way is forecasted. You know, Chris talked about kind of a predictive modeling. So when we opened up our store, we didn't have any data, so you can't really call it forecast. We just freaking guessed at what we were trying to buy. But if you have enough information behind it, you can actually forecast out what all your customers are going to be wanting. So now you're beginning to get into some of the seasonalities. You know, during the summertime, maybe more wine's being sold. During the wintertime, I'm hitting some of the Kolsch that are going to come out in the spring. So, you know, some of those things that kind of move up and down throughout the cycle of your business.
The other thing as it comes to forecasting, no matter what, we're talking about the demand that is maybe that you actually can see through sales. One way as a business to especially help your customers is have some sort of tool in place. So if you don't have a product, you still register that as demand. If you have customers coming in that are asking for something, but you never track that, well, that could all of a sudden be your new top seller, but you would never know because you never brought it in based off, you know, a one or two or three, like, who knows, depending on whether you or your employees or your partners, depending on your level of communication and, you know, if you're even tracking those signals that we can say are, you know, hidden demand signals because they're not in your sales history, how do you introduce those into your business? not to backtrack, but the example that we have here is also on the back side of your sheet. So as you guys kind of, you know, we're using all this lingo and things like that, use the sheet to kind of remind yourself, as well as, you know, on the back side, it has those equations just with addition and multiplication, subtraction, easy stuff. All right, so Kanban. Kanban is, to start with, let's call it a two-bin system. You finish a bin, you turn in a card. That's one way of doing it. The card triggers another order of the same standard size. So more or less, think about this. An example would be actually a real example that we do with liquid malt extract. We have so many cans in the front of our shop that when we start to bleed off those cans, they're in standard sizes, whether it's 12 or whatever the multiple of the box is. Well, once those go, we immediately take one from the back room, put it there. Well, then if the one in the back is now gone, that's also our visual reminder to order. So you're not just watching either one up front, because if you were just trying to track what is up front, all of a sudden you might be out, and then you have no buffer for the lead time or anything else, the variation in demand. So that's how Kanban kind of works, is standard bin sizes where you have one and another, so you can always have something. When there's a slot open, that's what's telling you to order that to backfill it. So again, it's very, very visual. You can do things, so if that product then is gone, you have nothing in your stock room, maybe when you pick up and move that product, the shelf or something is painted bright red. So there's no questions about it. That shows you that there's a problem. You need to do something. Reduces chances, again, for miscounts or lost inventory affecting your customers. So again, you see the empty bin, and it does not, you see the empty bin, but with that approach, you kind of have to carve out very specific amounts of your square footage for that system to be put in place.
So forecast is another one. You know, this is far too much for us to talk about within a 45-minute talk, but we did want to put it up there. It's a way to use statistics to account for what your mix and bias is. So you take those numbers, you're effectively guessing, you're forecasting out that, hey, I'm going to sell 20 units of this item based on some of my past history. And as you evolve with forecast, you can start putting in things like some of your customer inputs. Again, it's pretty tough to kind of talk to this one. We put it up here just as an example that it's out there. Some of the far more advanced supply chain, some of you guys may be already doing this, but for purposes of this, we just wanted to discuss it.
All right, inventory housekeeping. So again, this is the stuff that none of us probably enjoy, especially when we started. We were in, you know, the few hundreds of SKUs. Now we're thousands plus. So actually keeping track of all that isn't the most fun. You can do this in a various of ways. You can do like a cycle count where, you know, it could either you have software or some sort of tool, or if your inventory is either categorized by location in your facility or by category, you know, whether it's dry yeast versus wet yeast, on a regular reoccurring basis, you want to actually be counting that. Whether or not when someone is either loading your inventory incorrectly, or you have a gap, or if there's just inventory loss, or if you yourself are robbing from your store making beer, you want to make sure and account for that so you can understand, you know, okay, really, where is my inventory level, so you don't get a false signal to buy, or if you're really out and you don't know it. One thing that works really good for this is ensure that you're driving to FIFO. So FIFO is first in, first out. Obviously, in the liquid yeast, this is critical. We actually protect our liquid yeast. We have our own fridge in the back, so that way we can do a very good job maintaining, you know, the dates and the expiration on the liquid yeast. Otherwise, you know, me and myself, if I'm going to get a yeast pack, I'm always going to pull the freshest one, because then maybe I don't do a starter or I don't do that, you know. And so if your customers have access to it, this is just an idea, you know, they're probably going to do the same thing I would and grab the freshest one. Well, you could still grab one that's maybe, you know, 1 month old or 2 months old, and it has just the same viability, but, you know, just to make sure that you control that for your customers and everyone wins. So first in, first out. The other thing in terms of refreshing your data. So as you go through this, you know, you might, how often do you review your sales number? Hopefully it's at least maybe every period, every month, every quarter. But you have to then not only manage that for the sake of your business, but then also take those results and reapply them into your inventory calculations. Because maybe what was once an A item is now a C item. So you don't want to just continue to order that and stock that like at the top level. Maybe you need to start trimming the fat on some of those and just the opposite. Maybe you had some hidden demand signals that you weren't aware of that now those are creeping up. Maybe it's a new product and you got to, you know, in terms of a new product that you don't have data on yet, well, maybe after 6 months you do. So now you can actually roll that into your inventory solutions. All right, so some of these outcomes. You know, two things, we're hoping that you get more inventory turns. So again, from the very, very beginning, that you're ordering the right stuff at the right time so you can have more cash for your business. Gives you also fresher ingredients, less expired, standardize your shipping, schedule your deliveries, reduce space required to house the inventory. So now again, whether or not you're saving money or you're doing all the above, again, back to our original points, now you have opportunities maybe to take that cash and expand your value contributions to your customers, whether or not that's, who knows, you know, growlers or brew on site, all those other options. Maybe now you have that additional money, square footage, et cetera, to grow your business. For the inventory accuracy, it increases visibility. So now instead of it just being your gut or like tribal knowledge, what you think is going on, you can stress less. You now have something that is a standardized approach to how you control your inventory. And if that approach isn't working, well, at least you know what the problem is. You have somewhere to go and actually say, well, actually, I set that item up as a wrong level. I set that up on as a B, and so it's a true method. Maybe it needs to be an A. And so you can actually kind of reverse out if you set something incorrectly because it's a very standard approach to how you're ordering your inventory. And, of course, this is all about our customers. Customers have what they want when they want it. So, again, I know I've personally been embarrassed when a customer wants USO 5 and I don't have it. That's embarrassing to me. So that's where you know you want to make sure that you understand what are your key drivers, and if you know there's a one of the clubs having an event, or if you make your own kits and you're actually taking inventory from yourself so you can build kits that you're tracking all those different demand streams to make sure you're at the right levels of inventory. So I
want to hit on the cycle counts one more time because I can't tell you how important this is if you try and set up an inventory system. I know they're no fun, but it's part of it. A good example from us is little 3/8-inch bucket clamps. So we kept mislabeling them when we were starting out. So, you know, as we scan a SKU, our system's linked up, so it's, you know, it's decrementing an inventory when we sell. Well, we were selling same price as a different size on the SKUs and kept ordering because we're using our inventory system. And kept ordering. We kept looking over and be like, dang, I didn't realize these sold that well. Yeah, okay. So we have this gigantic pile because we're ordering the duplicate SKU from the mislabel and we don't have any of the other size that the people were wanting. So if we were doing our cycle counts like we're telling you guys you need to do, which we obviously weren't, then you wouldn't have those kind of problems, you know, so I mean, simple things, you know, stuff happens. You guys, you own shops, you own distributor networks, you know, different things. You may mislabel something, you know, your employees may be putting in wrong SKUs. You never know what's happening. So unless you count and start seeing a problem, you're never going to get to the bottom of what that problem is. And not having the right numbers in there will kill your inventory system instantly.
Just a true application of what we do kind of as a gut check, you know, as we receive something, if, you know, we're going in looking at the quantity it says on hand, and now we're obviously going to increase that quantity based on our receipt from our vendor, well, then we're going to do a gut check. You know, okay, if I've just, you know, the system says I have, you know, 4 sacks and I just got 10 more in, okay, you know, as I'm either going back, actually check that? Okay, do I have maybe three sacks that are still sealed and one's open? Like, you know, kind of do that gut check so it comes part of your nature to always double check and understand the importance of that inventory. Again, you know, cycle counting is kind of the idea that it's done periodically, kind of in a regular reoccurring pattern. But then you also, it's very good to more or less, you know, take some time off before year end, whatever that is for your fiscal year, and actually, you know, go down deep and count it. One thing also when we started, and this is just understanding your systems, I'm sure you guys are, this is common sense to you guys, but we didn't know it. We didn't know that our inventory management system couldn't handle fractions or decimals of a unit. So we were starting to sell everything as, you know, we just had one SKU at one quantity. Someone comes in and they want a quarter ounce or a quarter pound or this, and we're, what do we do? So now we had to shift our whole inventory system. So like a quantity of one actually represents a quarter ounce or a quarter pound, things like that. So you can truly understand that, you know, down to that level of accuracy, you understand what's moving, what's selling. Because then on the hop side, maybe you guys bag your own. Maybe you guys are buying pounds of some, but only ounces of other. Well, you know, we all want to make sure and always have the freshest stuff for our customers. So maybe even though it might be an opportunity to buy in bulk for some, it might not be prudent to do that for everything. So you really want to be able to track your inventory at the most granular level as possible. All right, so we wanted to give a little extra time, or maybe about the right time, for you guys to ask questions. Hopefully we didn't burn through that too much. It was some very good applications for you guys, but please hit us with any questions that are specific to your business or high level, and hopefully we know our stuff well enough to give you an answer.
Hi, that was awesome. Thank you. It was really great. I have pretty good reorder points. I'm happy with them. And I run reports. I usually do 2 weeks before, run the reports, see what was selling to every 2 weeks. I find that keeps me pretty seasonal to see what's happening. So I'm happy with that. But the one thing I argue with my business partner about is there are price breaks from the distributors for getting certain amounts. So let's say airlocks. This week I really need to only order 50, but I'm going to save a penny a piece if I order 150. So is there math to figure out whether that's the better thing to do, or is it really just a gut thing?
So a perfect example. I love the question. You know, we've had the exact same conversations that you're talking about, because you're right. There's certain things that, so I guess where we draw the line is if it's within the A groups, so the items we're really turning, we'll usually go up to standard order quantity. When you get down to the C groups, and again, there's not like a universal equation that's going to make this decision for you. You know, it's going to have to be what you want to do for your business. But when you get down into, say, your C items, things that don't turn as much, if you want to invest your cash to sit on a shelf to save a dollar, you know, that's up to you. So I don't have an equation for you. You just got to make the determination. You know, where we turn at on our inventory, we try and turn five times. If we get higher than five for us personally, if we get higher than five, it begins to get freight rough on us. You know, when we opened up, we were at two times, so we didn't have any freaking money to do anything. So we've bled that down using the system to run five times. But when we run into, say, airlocks, you know, as an example, you know, yeah, we'll buy a standard pack or bag or muslin bags or, you know, whatever those may be, palletized on the bottles. That way you'd get the discount. You know, did we need the pallet before we're going to do another shipment? No. But we have enough space to be able to hold, like, an A item like that and get that additional margin. So
cool. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, to follow up exactly that, you know, the idea, you know, what I kicked off with, you have to be open to change. You have to experiment. I mean, at times we've bought a pallet of bottles, and then, you know, we have a relatively small shop, maybe average, you know, about 2 to 2,500 square feet. Well, we got a pallet of bottles, and now we're stacking bottles everywhere. well, now what does that do to my customer experience? You know, that's that space that now is, you know, pretty critical to my business. I've got a pallet of bottles. Well, maybe I could have been brewing on site with that space. You know, you got to kind of pick and choose what works, but always be open to change and trying something new. In terms of that as well, in terms of buying in bulk and maximizing your shipments, if you guys are doing pallet orders, you know, and you want to, you know, we, you know, whether it's by weight or by volume, try and, you know, maximize that shipment so you can get a solid 8-foot pallet and, you know, add to it. You know, if Two Row is going to sell, you know, don't do what we did and get 3 sacks of Special B. But if you can just add to it or add buckets or add bombers or things like that that you know you're going to turn, maximize those costs so it doesn't impact your margin as much.
Thank you. Cool.
Morning.
Good morning.
So the only thing I didn't understand, and I should warn you, I'm not very good at math, but on the classification, if you have a C item and 80% of the time, that's 80% of your items in your case, and you're okay with those being out of stock, or you want those in stock 75% of the time, that means of your total inventory, you'd be out of stock 20% of the of your inventory.
No, thank you for the question. And to give more clarification, that's not how often you'll be in stock or out of stock. That goes towards your safety stock level. So kind of in the chart down here, that bottom band, Z-score and your ABC classification, that's how much extra inventory you want to carry to protect yourself. So you still should always have your reorder points and reorder quantities to make sure that in a perfect world, you have everything 100% of the time. But on those occasions where you don't, that's where you invest in your buffer. So if you see items, you don't invest in your buffer stock because it's a lower risk. That answer your question?
Yep.
Yep.
Good. I know I, under the heading, I would never go in and buy 3 bags of Special B to stick in the front window of the shop, you know. Not much traffic interest there. But under the same heading of buying something you're not going to turn over terribly quickly, is it worthwhile then, do you think, to put something nice and shiny like a stainless steel fermenter in the front window? You might sell one of those a year. Is that worthwhile?
So for us, absolutely. You know, one of the things, I think last year there was a seminar on kind of setting up your shop, you know, giving people, when you walk in, there's a nice open space. Kind of putting those kind of key items, those trigger items like that, like the stainless steel fermenters that right when you walk in, they're right in front of you. Yeah, I mean, for us, I think that's a great idea. We do exactly what you're talking about. We have some of those high-end ones because most of the time, you know, if people are coming in to buy grains or hops, they're always coming in to get those things. We've got those in the back to try and get you to walk into our shop to, you know, to see something else that, oh, yeah, you know, maybe I need that, or maybe there's that impulse buy. But if you don't have those impulse items up there, the cool thing, the next shiny thing, you know, you're not going to sell it. So if you've got the money to do it, yes.
The other follow-up when we were talking about hidden demand, you're hoping that a customer even gives you that feedback. If you don't have even, you know, like a grain mill or a stainless fermenter or anything like that for a customer to even talk about, like, oh, I saw that last week. Do you guys carry that? Well, if you just don't have it, maybe it's a new burner. If your customer might never give you that feedback, so you'll never know that you might have missed out on that. So if you can carry those specialty items, you know, that's where, you know, feel out your market. I mean, we've probably gone through, I mean, at one point we had a stainless steel, what was it, a 15-gallon, a half-barrel fermenter. So, I mean, we had a pretty sizable piece of equipment that was sitting in our shop for a while, but sure enough, we turned it. So, you know, that stuff also kind of not to compare to some of the big guys that are here and, you know, might be you, but that also gives you some of the street cred. It's fun. You know, every one of us wants that new shiny thing, and that kind of helps, you know, just the conversation.
We're a new startup, homebrew supply store. I'm interested to find out what is the time frame of your data. So what's like data collection? Is it a year? Is it, you know, 6 months? Is it a quarter? Be able to get a more accurate picture of what you want to do.
So we typically use 6 months because it catches a couple seasons. You can spread out. You know, if you want to do a year, the problem with it is, and the reason why we really trend to 6 months is, yeah, you do get some seasonality within your data for the entire scope of the year, but what you sold last year, whether your business is growing, shrinking, you got a new group of customers, whatever it may be, continuing to use that past data becomes less predictive for your ordering. So for us, staying within kind of a six-month window, and we'll update every month on what the sales were, so we're dropping that sixth month every month. That's what seems to work the best for us.
So, yeah, so 6 months is your window, but it's a rolling 6 months every month. So then you can kind of keep track of, you know, the latest, whether or not you need to change a classification. But, I mean, honestly, talk to the people. Again, try and avoid what we did. And, you know, we actually weren't a part of a club. We were still not a part of a club because we're trying to keep our we love all of our Memphis beer clubs, so we don't want to pick and choose. But, you know, talk to those guys. Do surveys. Really try and understand what your initial customers want so you're just closer to it, so you don't have to, you know, kind of work down maybe inventory that was accidentally, you know, off target.
I'm just curious if you guys have some recommendations or equations to calculate either square or cubic footage that you need for your selling inventory and then your safety stock, overstock.
So when you look on your sheets there, actually, when you kind of look at that reorder point, that number becomes kind of your bin size for those. And it depends. I don't know if you've got, you know, if you've got back stock room or if you're only literally putting out in the front. But, you know, you'll have to go through on the product sizes yourself. We've got some that we use, you know, depending on bottles we know. So when an order comes in, if you come into our shop, there's two racks of slots that go three high that is where our bottles go. So if we over-order past that, you know, back to the previous question, we're like, hey, we can get a little margin. Let's go ahead and do it. We got the space. We have an overflow area. When that overflow area starts piling up, the guy who's buying stuff gets like a reaming, you know, because we get pretty agitated. It's all our cash sitting there again that's not moving, you know. So you can do that off that reorder point. So that order quantity, you know, let's say I order 50 units and I can put 10 out on my floor to try and sell, at least 40 I'm putting in the back. You know, if you size those off that reorder point number, that'll give you what your space is. And you shouldn't be going over that space unless you're trying to grab a margin buy.
Did that answer the question?
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
I'm trying to think of the best way to say this. When it comes to economy of packaging, when you have a product, especially a new product, I see there's sort of two extremes. Like, do you want it to be as compact as possible no matter what, so you can maximize the space? Or are you willing to do you, are there situations where you want bigger packaging, maybe even that it's necessary? And packaging that kind of helps sell the product. Saying there? Are you willing to have? Do you feel like packaging sells products? And if so, do you make accommodations for that in your purchasing?
I would say no. A lot of our stuff that we do, we're very we try and target the smallest size, so we're not just using more. We're more inventory focused. It's probably one of our problems with our partnership that, you know, we're more focused on the operation side. We probably aren't the subject matter experts to talk on the marketing or the advertising perspective of changing the size. For us, obviously, with our different distribution network, I think they do a great job of giving additional marketing collateral. So we do have some stuff, whether it's, you know, kind of around our bar or our area where you check out, things like that, where you can kind of have those conversations. But in terms of, you know, we have some areas that are, you know, display, but we don't, I would say we don't ever increase the actual product size for visibility. We use other tools to drive that visibility.
Thanks again for the presentation. There's a lot of good information here that is helpful. We just opened a second store, and in our first store, we're just kind of seat of our pants. We've gone through and done some basic math just on the amount of stuff we sell, and we have a 3-week, you know, inventory order cycle, and we try and keep at least 6 weeks. Our turn is about 6 weeks for most of our inventory, so we're pretty efficient in that sense, but we run into some issues. The issue we have now, and my question is, now that we have the second store, when you're using like the Z values and that math to calculate your safety stock. So for our parent store to do the safety stock levels, would you take the safety stock level for the big store plus the second store on top of it? Or is there a more advanced equation for calculating inventory for two different locations?
So your safety stock would be the same until you get a different data set for your new store. So I would apply, you guys are what, Utah?
Yeah.
The two stores out there?
Yeah, I had a picture of one of them up there.
Yeah, did we?
Yeah, thanks.
I would apply the same safety stock across because you have your data set. Now, it may be a little different given the geography. I don't know. Customers may use different things there. But ideally, you're going to have, you know, you're going to need to keep 10 units. We call it a node, so you've got two distribution nodes now. So you need to keep the same stock levels at both in order to support your customers. But over time, you'll want to split those two data sets because you may have different people buying different things within different regions. And, you know, for the rest of the group, even when you branch out, the same applies. You may have different regions buying completely different products. So that will drive your safety stock off those local sales.
Yeah, and part of our problem, too, might be just how fast we're turning everything. When I do a transfer out of from our smaller store to the big store, it can just blast the inventory in the parent store. And so I'm just trying to find a way if there is, like, mathematically to prevent that from happening. So
yeah, we can definitely like talk about that offline, but if you're using one store almost as like a warehouse,
yeah,
to the other, you definitely can, same thing in terms of like maybe on a physical side, like that Kanban example, mm-hmm, maybe you start to be able to trend one store specifically, and then you can be like, man, this is what I naturally rob from my bigger store.
Gotcha.
And you can always have that earmarked. So then more or less you're not surprised when, you know, you pull one to the other. But that's where you know, probably on your current data, if it kind of is all rolled together, you know, you're kind of assuming that your second store is just cannibalizing sales from the first. You really have to, you know, with the new opening, I'm assuming you're targeting new growth and new customers and new markets. So that's where, in terms of what Josh is saying, and having two nodes and eventually data sets and separate safety stock, that will be the target. But you could, in the time being, more or less have stuff set aside specifically to pull from one to the other.
Yeah, let's circle up on that because you're changing models a little bit from, say, like the LD Carlson as your distribution to now your main shop is your distribution for your other shop. So that's a good conversation.
Cool.
We'll follow up on that.
Thank you.
I suspect that you build most of them when people come into the store, yes?
Well, there's a good story behind that, actually.
Okay.
So you remember where we said we just bought a whole bunch of stuff?
Yeah,
well, apparently they don't sell a lot of those kits. So we have a big list of those things. That's why you don't do that. No, but we're actually transitioning a little bit because we do build our own kits. And we found out, just since we're a local shop, that, you know, our branding on there, Memphis, Tennessee, the people like it. You know, not that our beers are any better, but they just enjoy buying our products.
I like the way that you separate that out on your website, but then I also noticed that it says plus 50 plus brewers best kits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can't turn any of that stuff over. Do you guys, you find yourself sitting on some inventory?
Well, we do on some of, you know, here's the challenge with that one. So a lot of those run into the C items, unfortunately. But at the same time, you know, our business is customer focused, customer centric. So it was the whole reason we opened the shop. It was saw an opportunity that, hey, look, there's an opportunity for a really customer-facing, want-to-have-fun type of shop. You know, we want to give you the options that you want. So for us, you know, we do take some hits sometimes on those. Some of the materials we can recycle and use. Some of them we'll just brew ourselves. Some of them we'll give away at events. You know, if someone's doing a charity event, if they did a brew on TV day, we're like, yeah, take that kit, you know. For us, it's about having a variety for our customers. So we accept the hit a little bit on that one. But, I mean, for you, it's up to your business. So we really only, out of some of our basic kits that we order, we really only have about 10 or 12 that kind of metronome. You know, the rest of them are someone comes in and he wants the ancient ale. I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Maybe it's that one, you know. So.
Thanks for the presentation, putting the math to the side.
Yeah, to kind of follow up, so we do have our own branded kits, but we definitely market them and differentiate them. So it's kind of a different customer in terms of, you know, the Brewer's Best or the other ingredient kits that are readily available pre-made. A lot of our guys, our customer, we're trying to change the kind of the beer scene in Memphis to make it people that don't have confidence that they can come in and we're the people that talk to. Again, like we were talking about, our curve is kind of exponential. We were probably brewing 3-4+ batches a week when we first got going, and being engineers, we tracked all of our data and had tons of fun with that. But in terms of just being very customer-centric, so even if we do have to take the hit on stuff that doesn't turn, even whether it's yeast or, you know, wet yeast or dry yeast, you know, we're very, very adamant to make sure that the customer's always experience is top notch. And so, like Josh was saying, we peel that stuff off, you know, whether or not we take the hit or anything. The tools here minimize the hit, but then, you know, we'll brew with it. I mean, we've had fun where we've done, a triple where we blended 14 yeasts. So, I mean, you know, you can just kind of take that inventory and, you know, use it for yourself and just have fun.
Those kits are combined.
Yeah, so, like, both for their kits as well as our own, the ones that turn more, we have those in the back. So the ones that we, you know, the 10 out of the 50 or so, we're constantly turning those. So we have, you know, one variety up front, but then those pulls we pull from the back as well as ours. Since we have all the ingredients on site, we do it daily. It's part of our kind of standard daily business that whatever of our own Bernoulli kits that we sell, you're staying until you replenish that. So the stock, the room is full the next morning. So that's one thing that for our own kits, people always, you know, have a lot of trust and faith that those kits are always going to be as fresh as possible. Now, if you come in and you get a run on one style, right then you might be busy building some kits. But, you know, that's just the thing that we're okay with. Anything else? All right, guys. Well, we really appreciate your time. Again, feel free to talk to us.